Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Today is February 22nd, 2017. And we will start with Senate Bill 198. And Beth, if you will give us a little idea what that does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 198 would create the Oregon Independent Science Review Board consisting of 7 members appointed by the governor. There is a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to call up Mr. Dan Edge, Mr. Jim Myron, and Tom Wolf, please. Mr. Tom Wolf, I'm sorry.
This is a serious group.
Yes, it is.
Oh, we have a lot of fun, though.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on.
There you go.
Mr. Edge, would you like to start, please?
Sure, I'd be glad to start. For the record, my name is Dan Edge. I'm an associate dean in the College of Agricultural Sciences at Oregon State University, and I reside in Corvallis. I also served as co-chair of the Senate Bill 202 Task Force, which was the report which generated the recommendations, which very closely align with the bill that you have before you today. I wanted to take the opportunity first to begin by thanking the staff from the Institute of Natural Resources at Oregon State University and a professional facilitator that helped the Senate Bill 202 Task Force do their work. And they were a remarkable group of folks to work with and very helpful. That task force was composed of 13 scientists from 3 of Oregon's top research institutions, industry, and nonprofits as a basis for the work that we did. I also want to thank, I believe it was probably the Interim Committee on Environment and Natural Resources that prepared this bill and the work that the staff did to put it together. It very closely aligns with the recommendations that we provided in our report. So very briefly, I did want to say that the task force supports the adoption of SB 198 with 2 suggested modifications. 1, regarding the appointment of the administrator of the Independent Scientific Review Secretariat, and 2, regarding funding of the Independent Scientific Review Fund. Excuse me. One of the things about the report is our task force found it was that most of Oregon's natural resource agencies do a pretty good job of science kind of review for individual kind of or agency specific kind of issues, but we found that the processes vary substantially across the state agencies, and furthermore there's a substantial difference in capacity of our state agencies in conducting a quality internal type of review. And so based upon our examination of a number of models around the country and how other places do this kind of work, we concluded that for the very complex natural resource problems that are multidisciplinary in nature, that involve multiple agencies, that some scientific review process was needed for the state of Oregon, and that Oregon has some unique characteristics that lead us to believe that we need to establish such a review process. Excuse me. And also that existing resources in the state are not adequate for conducting these types of reviews. There is a growing distrust of science these days. The scientific literacy of Oregonians in general, and then this whole proliferation of alternative facts will necessitate that Oregon has a scientific review process which will generate trusted, non-biased evaluations of what the current science is. Thank you so much. Many of these complex issues will not be resolved with dueling science or an incomplete understanding of the human and natural resources or ecological systems underpinning these issues. SB 198 creates a scientific review process that is transparent and inclusive. It will focus on the most critical issues of statewide importance, and it is both cost-effective and flexible. Reviews conducted under this process would be future-oriented, not looking back at past decisions, but looking into the future, and would have a high likelihood of providing positive impact or positive influence on natural resource management decisions. Thus, we support adoption of SB 198, but offer the two following modifications. First, we recommend a modification that the administrator, the independent scientific review secretariat, be selected by and serve at the pleasure of the independent scientific review board, not the governor. And the reason for that is it would help, we believe, to insulate the administrator, who's going to do most of the day-to-day work on behalf of the board, and the secretariat that he or she will supervise, from potential political influence. The second recommendation we have is that the Independent Scientific Review Fund is funded by the state general fund and not by through gifts, grants, or contributions from public or private sources. And this recommendation may be more of a function of us not really understanding how that fund would work, but from reading the bill, it appears that that fund would be able to take contributions from other sources, these grants, contracts, from private or nonprofit organizations in support of the scientific review process. And we discussed that extensively during the task force meetings, and we were very concerned that we might end up in a pay-to-play kind of situation where a sector or an industry or people opposing those sectors or industries would provide resources for a review, and their interest would be elevated, reprioritize what the scientific review board thought was important, and in fact perhaps potentially bias the outcomes of some of the reviews. So in closing, I want to thank the staff for preparing this bill, and I encourage that you recommend it for adoption with these two potential modifications. And with that, if you have questions, I'd be glad to try to address them.
Mr. Wolf, please.
Chair Olson, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf with Trout Unlimited, a 3,200 members in Oregon and 155,000 across the nation conservation group. And I'm here today on the behalf of our members to declare our support for SB 198. And we were also supportive of SB 202 that set up the task force that created and it caused the SB 198 to go forward. Trout Unlimited is very, because of all work we do that involves science, whether it's restoration projects, working on advocacy, testifying on issues, we're very dependent on science. We have, within our staff, we have approximately 10-member scientific staff that looks at all issues that we cover and looks at the science and makes sure that whenever we do, it's based on science. We also think it's important, besides the science of organizations like ours, the science of agencies, and obviously the science of ODFW and ODF and U.S. Fish and Wildlife is important, but there needs to be, we feel, an independent review process as would be created by SB 198 that can bring in scientists that have a good grasp of different types of science to look at what's being produced and agree with it, so that we know that it's not just based on one group of scientists' decisions. We believe that independent science review is an important function of all science as it moves forward. So we support SB 198 for that reason. We also support the two suggestions that Dan Edge supported within his testimony. We believe those are valid suggestions, especially in light of the political stuff that's been happening recently concerning ODFW commission. And we just believe that this is a bill whose time has come, that we need to have an independent science team, and we believe SB 198 is a solution to that. Thank you.
Mr. Myron, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Myron, and I'm here representing myself today. I've got a little history on this issue. I go back to the late 90s when the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds was developed in this building, and I remember sitting in a third-floor room up in the Senate side with a whole group of agriculture and timber lobbyists. I was the only conservation person in the room, and arguing strenuously about the need for independent science. We did get that included in the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. It was called the Independent Multidisciplinary Science Team, and it worked well for a number of years. The two problems I experienced with that previous team that have been remedied, I think, in this current proposal is, first of all, the appointments process. The IMST was appointed by all three of the leading bodies, the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, and the Governor. And that was fine as long as one party or the other was in control of everything, but once that did not occur, then getting appointments made to the team was very time consuming and very controversial. I happened to be working for Governor Kulongoski at the time, and spent a lot of time on this issue trying to get the seats filled and kept full. And over time, as the team did their what they call their landscape reports, the larger landscape size reports that besides just the requests from agencies, but once those were done, then it kind of I think a lot of people lost interest in what the work of the IMST was, and it suffered some budget cuts, and it eventually just died of old age. So it's time to reinvigorate the independent science function within state government, and I think that the bill before you does that. So I would encourage you to support it and look forward to seeing it pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Roble.
Thank you. So I understand the reasoning for the two changes that were acknowledged, but I would tell you that having worked on that board, especially for the Nearshore Research, getting money for natural resource agencies out of the general fund has not gone well over the last number of years. And so expecting science to be funded out of the general fund means we'll have an organization formed that will never have any money to work. That would be my biggest concern. And I haven't seen any evidence to lead me to believe it could be otherwise. So in the science trust that we did, the Nearshore Science Trust, we did allow everything to happen, money to come in from all those different places. But we did another proviso, and that was basically that the commission, the group that's doing it, had to come up with their criteria for the kinds of research they were going to do and do that in a way that was without anybody else. And then the only things they were going to fund were the priorities they set. And if people wanted to give money to that, that would be great. So I think there are ways to do that if we really want to move forward with any of this stuff, we're going to have to think of creative ways to have resources. Because I just have not been, it has not been proven to me that natural resource agencies in our state are going to get very much general fund. And that's my biggest concern. I guess that's the only thing I would ask. If we want to set up the criteria and the basis for it, the bill's great. But if we want it to do any work, I'm worried about having resources go to it. I would love to spend some money on science personally, but I haven't been real successful in getting general fund. So,
Mr. Chair and Senator, if I might respond to that, I think that to me, a dollar is a dollar. I'm not that concerned what source it is, as long as there isn't an expectation that it's going to be spent in a certain manner. The big difference between what's being proposed in 198 and what we had previously was this was just kind of shoved off into OWEB and funded with lottery dollars. This, under this current proposal, It's a program within OSU, so it's part of the OSU budget, and I think there's a much greater opportunity to get general fund dollars through the OSU budget than there is through a natural resource agency.
We could. I appreciate that deal. I found it fairly easy to get a lot of extra money for OSU. That's been a pretty simple task.
Senator Przanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on the second concern regarding the funds, my reading of the bill, it does provide for the ability to accept money from outside. I don't necessarily read it that it would mean that you'd be prohibited, or the state legislature would be prohibited from using general fund money to go in. Normally, these type of situations, requesters like to have the ability or the flexibility to bring money in. And this would also, I would assume, could be money that could be applied for federal grants as well. I guess if Beth might be able to give us some perspective at some point whether that is part of it. It just seems to me this
currently
is
trying it to, is, but not with the amendment, I don't think.
Yeah, because it just seems to me that are we losing an opportunity or potentially losing an opportunity to get federal money coming in from one of the foundations or anything?
Yeah, Chair Olson, Senator Przanski, thank you. I'm not certain, and which was the reason I couched the initial recommendation and not really perhaps understanding how the fund would work. Certainly what we were conceiving was that maybe what we were proposing would prohibit federal grants, and I could see that that might be a potential source of funds. I'm pretty familiar with the federal granting process, and I'm not certain that there would be much in that way. I think Senator Roblin's suggestion that maybe some criteria could be placed either in the bill or the board that uses these funds could establish sort of a screening process that would solicit funds might work as well. The concern that we had was more about how the fund would actually work. I do agree with Senator Roblin that the natural resource agencies have had a difficult time with the state budget, and Jim was sharing the dollars in the OSU budget with us here just a moment ago. I was joking. As a mid-level bureaucrat in a semi-state agency, I understand it's going to be a very challenging session this time around.
Thank you.
Good. I do have a few questions before you gentlemen leave. One of my concerns was, of course, the fact you had brought it, we just talked about the funding, so that it doesn't drive decisions, it just funds decisions. But my question is, since this program, this group will be put together by the government, by the governor, whether it be a Democratic governor or a Republican governor, it makes no difference. How do we make certain that we have unbiased, straightforward answers, whether they're the answers we want to hear or the answers we don't want to hear, so that the science is not driven to come to the conclusion of an answer, but that the science is driven to give us an answer? How do we prevent from that?
Yes, Chair Olson, thank you. Just very quickly, so the bill lays out the criteria that the people who would be appointed to the board would have, and I think it's an excellent criteria. It comes right out of our report. But those people on the board would really help guide what the review process was going to be, what the specific questions were going to be. One thing that we discovered in our review of these kind of processes around the country is that often the questions are not specific enough or not targeted at a specific policy or whatever, and so you end up with a nebulous review, and we think this board along with the administrator will help focus the questions, and some questions they may decide not to do because it just doesn't seem like it's going to make sense or we can't get clarity on what the question one member of that board would then serve as the chair of a panel, and it would be these panelists that are selected, outside experts from around the country, people that are specific experts in the targeted areas based upon their research. And in my experience, when you're talking about that caliber of people, first and foremost, they are interested in their integrity and the perception of their science in a greater scientific community. And so I think that the process that we've outlined here would result in good quality, unbiased reviews as much as possible. I mean, there, you know, that concern crops up. I know that is a concern of folks that provided comment during our task force, that folks have had varying experiences with some types of reviews. But once again, most of these reviews are done in-house currently, and this would be an external review process, which would be peer-reviewed. It would also have, you know, do the Oregon way. You know, folks would have the opportunity to come in, provide their own information, public testimony during the fact-finding stage. And so I think there's a real opportunity to get all the information to consider.
I can anticipate. I was just going to say follow up, but I'm the chair, so I don't have to do that.
Oh, man. Wait a second.
The power.
I can anticipate the opposition, and the opposition is going to say that this is going to be designed specifically to move either party's agenda the direction it needs to be moved. And having a science background myself, I don't believe that that's what science does. Science looks at an issue and said, this is how we get to this conclusion, and this is what it takes to get there, and whatever we come up with is the answer we get. Can we be assured that if this goes through and starts, that no matter what answer we get, whether we like it or not, that it's going to be what science has dictated to be proven to be true so it can be duplicated?
Chair Olson.
Tough one.
Yeah, that is a tough one. I don't know that I can guarantee that, but I think the process we've identified is a similar process which is used at the National Research Council. The state of Washington has a similar process, as well as the state of California. And then, of course, there are a number of international organizations that do very similar kind of scientific review processes that result in quality scientific information. And, you know, beyond that, I don't know what more I can tell you. We're suggesting a similar mechanism and process for conducting reviews, and then the reviews would be peer-reviewed among other scientists. So I think it's as good of quality as you can possibly expect. Of course, we know peer review sometimes doesn't work from the standpoint of scientific journals, but otherwise I do believe it's a good process.
From my perspective,
go ahead.
From my perspective, at times, I do not agree with some of the agencies and what they provide to us because I feel that it is bias. And I feel comfortable in knowing that if we had a group of science-minded folks that could provide us, because we're not all trained in all the categories, to provide us with information that's clear, transparent, and came to a general conclusion, whether, as I said, be right or wrong, it would certainly help us in the opportunity to move legislation forward that is needed by the state. Senator Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, since I got in this business, which sometimes I scratch my head why I got in this business, we get so much information coming at us anymore. You know, we have trouble deciphering what's the truth and what's not the truth, what's political, what's not political. I'll give you the biggest example is climate change or GMO. We got peer-reviewed science on both sides. So it seems like, you know, who's on the board, which scientists are we listening to, which science we're not listening to. It makes our job really, really difficult, you know. And that's why the board, and in my mind, is going to drive this program. Whoever makes up that board will drive that program. And the information coming to us is we won't know what's going on in the work groups and what which scientists are putting which together. We're really only going to know what the board presents us. And I worry about that.
Mr. Myron.
Just a couple of thoughts. This is Jim Myron again. Comparing this proposal to what we had previously with the IMST, a lot of us had concerns with the original setup of the IMST because it required that somebody with expertise in agriculture, timber, fishing, conservation, ta-da-da-da, all of those had to be represented on the board. And, you know, so you're building in conflicts of interest into the board. And we thought, well, is that going to work or not? But as the board found out over the years as they worked together, they did everything by consensus. Over the 14 or 15 years that that board operated, the IMST operated, they didn't take a vote. It was all of their actions were by consensus. And if they needed some additional expertise outside of the group that was there, they would go outside and find somebody for that additional information, but then they would bring it back to the board, and everything, like I said, is done by consensus. So there has to be a little bit of trust involved with the thing as if you think it's, you know, going to operate or not. But the first way worked fine. I think this is a better setup than what we had originally.
Senator Roble.
So I personally think this is a great plan. Getting the people in the right place to eventually build the trust is going to be important. The hard part is the issues that they're going to have to do. If I think of it right, I've got GMO would be a good example, and place, manner, and whatever of GMO might be more important than just GMO, because certain valleys have different aspects in science. We've also got canola in the valley. Should it be raised? We've had scientific review of that, and we've had OSU do some research plots, and didn't seem to be a problem, but everybody else that's out there thinks it is going to be a problem. So it puts this panel right in the middle of the most contentious issues that we have in the state. I would like that. I don't know if they would like it very long when they're on it, because I've watched belief trump science repeatedly, regardless of what the issue is. And I agree entirely with Senator Bershiger in that I would love to have an organization of scientists who I could really say, this is unbiased, they've really worked it, and they're going to come up with something that can help me make a better decision. That's hard to get to. But I think it can happen, and I agree with you. I think this is designed to do that, and I know that's why the money issue came up. You don't want to feel like you're being bought. I understand that completely. But I still hope that we know what we're biting off here, because I've been through a lot of these battles in natural resources the last number of years, and people do exactly what you're saying. They bring each of their own, bring in their own scientists to discount whatever the other scientist is saying. So having a really good record of how they came to that conclusion and all that kind of stuff, which I think is built into the transparency in this bill, is going to be really important if it's going to serve the purpose of giving us the information we need to make the best decision. So I hope you understand what I mean. I look at each one of those contentious issues, and every one of them is tough to get an answer.
Senator Prezanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just following up with Representative Roblin said, I too support the concept. I think the principle that you brought forward to not having the governor make that appointment is top number one. I think internally, you and meaning the board, or however it's going to be set up, will set up the internal workings of the board and what is going to be the criteria for accepting or rejecting money coming in, with the principal statement that's there for everyone to see as to what the principles are for, and to let the facts be the facts.
Yep.
And I think if you do that, and if you find yourself in a situation where someone said, well, you know, that foundation just gave you $100,000, you know, then you say, well, guess what? You know, we're not doing it. And that's where I think the integrity will build itself up to the point of where you do have great foundations that
from my perspective, are insulating themselves the best they can. You're always going to have that perception, alternative facts or whatever, saying whatever they want to say, whether it has merit or not.
And the last thing I'd like to say is that I think this is wonderful. I really, really look at it as an opportunity for me to have information presented that is fair and clear and clean, and I can understand it and say that's the direction to go. But I would hope that in our zest to form this committee, this group, that we as legislators give you time to let the science work, to do the research, such as an example, cap and trade. Let you review it, work it, come back with an answer, and then we provide legislation to move forward rather than we write legislation and then try to figure out if your answer can fit what we've written. So I would hope that if this board is formed, that we look at an issue and say, this is the issue we want to discuss next year. Can you bring us an answer to this issue by then rather than vice versa?
Senator Olson, if I may, thank you. I think that's spot on. What these things take time to do. And what I've seen personally in state agencies is the process is really compressed. I've got to make a decision. You know, the Wolf Plan is due 6 months from now. Let's do a scientific review. And so often what happens is there's not enough lead time to do a good quality review, and I think the process we've identified would do that if our lawmakers or stakeholders or natural resource managers are forward-thinking enough to recognize, yes, we're going to have an issue here with cap and trade, or maybe it's water quantity and quality and climate change or whatever, and we want to think about the next biennium introducing a bill or whatever. That's the kind of process we're talking about. We think most of these reviews are take about a year to do once we've established what the problem is.
Thank you very much. Are there any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mike Fries and Mr. Bob Rees. Is that Bob Rees?
No,
that's
no.
I'm taking his
place.
Okay.
He is a Bob. I mean, one of the songs. Wait a second. Did he change his name?
Bob, do you want to come up?
Yes.
Olson.
Yeah. Well, and I know it's Bob.
It was
also,
last
but,
time, but this is another
but,
day.
Yeah. He doesn't spell it that way, though. You don't spell it with an E-N, do you?
Yeah, you misspell.
Pardon?
One of us misspells.
Oh.
Is a family.
You're not making a prediction.
Is a
family. Oh, that is. Well, very good. I'm impressed.
Mike, you want to go first, please?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name's Mike Fries. I am vice president at Associated Oregon Industry here on behalf of a coalition. And I apologize, I didn't submit the some of the additional testimony in advance, so you're going to get a few copies. Included in that is a one-page kind of brief description of the coalition's concerns. In addition to that, I've also submitted comments that we submitted to the task force on August 29th. We really appreciate the task force's efforts in this area. This is a really, really difficult issue, one that I think we heard in the back and forth between the previous panel and yourselves. There are two real issues here. One is bias and political influence in trying to get to the right or quote-unquote good scientific outcomes, and two is funding. Some of the gentlemen that were up here previously, we have sat next to them and supported agency budgets. Those budgets are not getting any easier to support, and just from the sheer funding issues. And so what we're concerned with is, in order to get good science, which we support, we would like policy made based on good science, but in order to get there, there are two things that I don't think are addressed in the bill. One, funding. Again, we know that that our natural resource agencies are underfunded. I would say our higher education system is underfunded. So those by adding a new program doesn't help that. And I'm not convinced that this effort can be appropriately funded and then actually develop and produce good science. In that same light, to open up the doors to, we tend to agree with the chair of the task force, to open up the door to other private funds or grants may not produce the best results either, and could simply call into question what was the what angle for those funds were asked for the science review committee to take. The other is, as I mentioned, is bias on an independent board. That's the whole purpose of having an independent board. However, if a board is comprised of political appointees and an administrator that reports to a governor, I do think that calls to question what is being asked of them, and is there political influence? So we've got to identify another way, in my opinion, and in our coalition's opinion, to establish that real independence and an independence away from that kind of political influence. Otherwise, it will be just like any other state board or commission that we go in front of, and a lot of different constituencies go in front of and have the same arguments. It's not really taking a problem away. It's really adding a new place to have probably age-old debates, and with that, with limited funds. So. With that, you can see from the testimony we've submitted, we would urge you to oppose the bill as drafted, and happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Mr. Reese could not be here from the Steelheaders today. I'm here today on behalf of both the Steelheaders and Friends of the Columbia Gorge, and they both support the concept in this bill. Creating this as a kind of independent science review mechanism that is very important. It's better than, I think, anything else that has been advanced. It's a workable and productive way to capture the benefits of this peer review type process that is so important. I think we can agree the management of Oregon's natural resources need to be backed up by the best possible science, and this measure is consistent with that goal. In the public interest, this proposal is a good way for using science in this building to further contribute to well-informed opinions. This, in turn, will make our democracy work better in today's very complicated world. We appreciate your attention to this issue.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Well, I have a comment, as I always do. I look at this as a boxing ring, and we have opponents on one side and we have opponents on the other, and we as legislators are the referee in the ring. Now, when you look at a boxing ring, which I don't much do, but when you look at it, there's usually three or four judges down there that keep a score, and they add up the score to figure out who won. Because it wasn't left up to the referee to determine it, it was left up to the judges. Now, Mr. Freeze, you're absolutely correct. It's a huge concern of mine, of bias. How do we get independent scientific review that is unimpaired by bias? And to be honest with you, I really think that's impossible. Because anywhere funding comes from, be it GMO, be it climate change, be it whatever, there's going to be two sides of the issue. Somebody's going to pay a scientist to come up with an answer on this side, and someone's going to pay a scientist to come up with an answer on that side. Coming from that world, I understand how that works. But independently speaking, scientists usually look at a problem and try to solve it and figure out how to reproduce the solution so that it works every time. It's going to be difficult. There's no question about it. Looking at the folks that are opposed to this, I can understand why they would do it, because they feel that they would get a biased answer to a question such as GMO. But what would be your answer to provide for we the legislators who have to make the decision, because we always get a one-pager from each side? How would you provide for us to be able to get something that was neither in favor of your side or in favor of their side, but the actual, actually what it is, like you would find in real life?
Yeah, I thought you were going to let me get away without any questions.
No, that's right.
So,
we did. It was just him.
Yeah, well, thank you.
It's an eight-parter. It's part one.
So that's why we also included the comments. And you'll see we raised some concerns and we provide some alternative approaches in there. And I think for the most part, we agree with your assessment that it is hard to get around bias. And so how do you then produce something that isn't that you recognize the bias, so you identify the bias, and then you can still produce a result that is informative and still produces good science. Frankly, I don't know precisely how to get there. The question then becomes, if that group or this new board can't get there, then what's the purpose when we have other needs? If we're going to have the same debate by simply moving it in front of a new board, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Certainly, we can work with proponents. We have we think we've been very constructive in our participation. To see where we can find opportunities that will produce the results that you all are looking for, that we're looking for, that identify bias, if that's how the only real option for us. But then it begs the question of, well, if we understand that we're going to get a biased result, then again, what is the purpose? So.
Is your, Mr. Fries, is your largest concern the fact that you won't get the answers to the questions you want that solidifies what you perceive?
I think it could be two things. One is, yeah, whether or not we get the answers that we agree with. But two, whether we even get the questions asked that we would like answered. So that's there's really two issues there. And so as the previous panel explained, that the board would then commission scientists to look at particular problems, that we don't expect that board is experts on everything. But the fact that they will be vetting what questions actually get reviewed is a problem. We believe it, or could be a problem. We actually don't know. I mean, the process hasn't started. As a Beaver alumni, I have the utmost confidence in Oregon State. That's one of those issues that I think we need to grapple with. It's not quite as simple as, you know, just standing up this independent science review board and getting actual independent science.
Are there any other comments? Mr. Fries, I just got a message here in front that the Beavers are trading you for two bags of wool and a goat.
And a future option.
That's right. And you're going to become a duck.
No.
But what happened to Chris Edwards, you know?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yes, believe me, I'm well aware.
You make some very good points. It is of concern, but another analogy, if you will, when you're out shopping for a car, you look at different types of cars, different vehicles, you listen to the sales pitch and all that stuff, and to make the final decision, you probably listen to people that have driven the car, an unbiased opinion of, you know, hey, that's a great car, I've had one, and I've had one for 20 years. It's difficult for we as legislators to make decisions on very critical scientific issues without a scientific background, and so it's kind of where I come from.
So, Mr. Chair, just in brief response, we think it's really easy. You can just listen to me, and that's the decision. Obviously, it's not quite that simple, and we understand that, and we recognize that. Again, happy to continue the conversation, but as drafted, there are really a number of concerns in the current draft.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Anyone else like to testify on this? Thank you. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 198, and I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 633, and I'm going to call forward Senator Tim Cano, please.
Is this the one we just talked about?
No, this is
the new one.
Senator, I apologize for the delay, but we had to get through that bill.
You better make sure.
Quite all right.
It's me, huh?
You're on.
Okay. I didn't know if you guys were going to do a summary of the bill or anything, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're absolutely correct. Beth, would you tell us what the bill does?
I'm pleased he was here on time. This is really an exciting thing.
It's an improvement, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 633 would establish a tax credit for costs of reforestation of commercial forest lands after a loss from a catastrophic fire. There is a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
Senator Knope, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Tim Knope, Senate District 27, which represents Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And I'm here today on Senate Bill 633, obviously in support of this bill. As we look at the issues of financial relief for reforestation on commercial forest lands, I think we need to recognize that each year wildfires have a devastating impact on Oregon's forests and therefore the owners of those forests. They destroy delicate ecosystems, they pollute our air, and they endanger our rural communities, costing millions of dollars to fight them. In 2013, 14, and 15, we saw between 1,100 and 1,200 total fires each year in Oregon, and between 53,000 and 104,000 of protected acres, a mix of privately owned forests and public lands, burn each of these years. And while wildfires are unpredictable, it is important that we prepare for damages that can be caused on the land they touch. And reforestation projects are costly for private landowners to do. And providing a tax credit will provide some relief and allow for reforestation projects to move forward. And so, therefore, I've submitted the bill and thought that when we have discussions about tax credits, I think this particular group is a worthy group because they are doing a lot for our environment when they do reforestation projects. And I think it's beneficial to all of us as Oregonians. And so I thought they should be part of the mix. And I recognize the difficulty of this budget year, but I just thought it was important to bring the bill forward and have the discussion and let the tax credit gurus figure it out. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Rubin.
Yeah, I'll probably make a statement because I actually really when we had our big fires down in Douglas County and a lot of Roseburg timber was there, there was a real conversation in the company regarding whether to reforest it because there is not a requirement, as there is in a bunch of others. If you harvest, you have to replant. Major fire, you don't. And it comes to the point, if you haven't been able to get your forest to production age in two or three fires, it really gets to be expensive for that next tree. So. If we really want to keep and maintain those forests, we're going to have to figure out a way over time to support the people who are trying to grow it. And so I appreciate the thought, appreciate the idea. And do you know of other places where fires have happened that they have not chosen to reforest? I know the federal government doesn't necessarily reforest. But
Vice Chair Olson, excuse me, Chair Dembro, who is listening, no doubt. Online. Senator Roblin, just anecdotally, we've heard, you know, that people are trying to figure out the value and if it makes sense to reforest. And, I mean, it's for a variety of reasons that are beneficial, obviously, to Oregonians, soil erosion, and, you know, just, you know, putting, I mean, we are, Oregon is timber, you know. I mean, we have a lot of timberland and it's good for the environment, you know, and we want to make sure these forests are managed well. I would be remiss if I did not include my favorite quote from Greg Walden, which is he enjoys his forests green, not black. And so once they've been blackened, let's turn them back to green. And so this helps that by providing some tax credits, which are green, to the individuals who are working to try to improve Oregon. So I don't have any specific you know, people who are saying, well, we're leaning this way, we're leaning that way. But I know, as you rightly pointed out, it's a discussion in some of these bigger fires on whether it makes sense to do it or not.
Senator Burchard? Senator Brzezinski? One thing I would ask then is if these credits were available, do you think they would be job creators?
Vice Chair Olson, there's no doubt that they are job creators. This is very labor-intensive thing to reforest.
Let me interrupt. We'll just take that off.
All right, Chair Olson. Senator Courtney will be glad to know you've joined his caucus. So, no, there's Republican chairs in this building. That's what he'll tell you. So maybe you could be one.
That's right.
Was there a coup? So anyway, there's no doubt that this is a job creator, and part of the reason I brought it forward, it's great for the environment. It obviously helps those who are want to do the right thing, want to reforest, and at the same time, it does create jobs and revenue for the state.
And a follow-up, I don't need to follow up, and another statement to that is the fact that once we replant those forests, they become carbon collectors, then, don't they?
Indeed they do, and that is another benefit to the environment.
Thank you. Any other comment? Thank you very much,
Senator. I will not go there. I know some collectors are still standing.
Thank you all. I appreciate your time and attention.
Does anyone else in the audience, would they like to testify on this bill? Yes, Mr. Kluding, please.
For the record, Bill Kluding, Cartlidge Industrial Council, Chair Olson, committee, just a sideline to this little bill. I think it's a good bill, but I just want to bring your attention to we're going to lose the woody biomass tax credit. It's a done deal. I don't think we can salvage it. This is going to be another critical area for these landowners to get this material out of the woods. It's either that or just stack it and burn it. Somehow, I'd like to see this bill go forward, but also we got to look at the fact that we have to have some sort of a tax credit to help get this woody material out of the woods to where it can be utilized into pellets or cogen facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? I'll remind the audience that this bill would have a subsequent referral to tax credits for their examination. If there's no further testimony, I'll close the Senate Bill 633. And thank you very much, colleagues, and we'll close the committee hearing. And we'll close the committee hearing.